Welcome back to the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. So my son and I have discovered something independently and pretty much at the same time. This is the concept of political correctness on the right. We're going to talk about it in podcast 610. So I guess we got to start with my Crown Vicks. You remember when I got my first one, the blue and white Crown Vic? Remember that car?
Yeah, how long ago was that? It feels like forever ago.
It was a long time ago. And remember that guy that approached us on the street in Chicago? We were on Broadway, and the guy ran up and started saying, "I was in this police car, Bob Dylan," or something like that, because I had Minnesota plates.
That was crazy.
So, yeah, and of course, the source for those Crown Vicks is ex-government cars, Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. And if you need a car, if you need a loan, if you have a job, you can get approved. They have great credit terms at exgovernmentcars.com. They take trades. They pay the highest values every day for trades. I've seen Ed do it more than once. Don't forget the three-day love-it guarantee, also exclusively at exgovernmentcars.com. So we're talking about Crown Vicks. We're talking about police Ford police SUVs, Ford police sedans, especially the Expeditions and the Yukons from Border Patrol and Homeland Security, and of course the Dodge Chargers and the Chevy V8s. I was hanging out the other night, and I was looking at a brand new Charger police car, and the cop came up behind me and he goes, "What do you think?" And I was like, "It's pretty awesome." So the Chargers are very popular, but if you want a reliable SUV, Expedition, Ford Police Sedan, or a Chevy Yukon, exgovernmentcars.com is the place. So get your butt down to exgovernmentcars.com, now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North. You can call them at 763-777-8782 or check them out online at
exgovernmentcars.com.
Well, this is the weekend for daylight savings time. Soon we will see spring weather, although we're having a snowstorm right now, so to speak. Not a blizzard, but a little bit of snow. But you will soon start seeing motorcycles. And if you ride, you know how important that is. So along those lines, I want you to check out Ciro3D, that's Ciro3D.com. Great motorcycle products and accessory, especially lighting options and solutions for spring. Happy spring. And ride safe from Ciro3D.com. Click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com or check out Ciro3D.com. So I think you and I discovered something almost accidentally and from different perspectives. And this is the idea that there is a thing about, there's something called political correctness now on the right, which has been given a name by a Cato Institute guy. And you did a video about it on Millennial Project YouTube channel, which we'll link to. And I experienced it just in my day-to-day, and it's been coming for a while. And I'm going to preface this by saying this is difficult for me because a lot of these people have been listeners to me for a long time, and they're good people. They're not bad people. But there, I have a sense that there is a patriotic correctness on the right, which is highly disturbing, considering that the right likes to think of itself as the rational thinking side of politics. So we have a new thing called patriotic correctness on the right, or at least that's a thing now, right? And you actually found some guy who is spreading this around. So we're going to talk about this a little bit because I discovered it. It's kind of been building over the last few weeks, and it finally just crystallized in my mind. So why don't you first tell us about yourself and what you do, and obviously you're my son, so Davis and Davis. This is the Davis and Davis show. Right?
Yeah, I think your listeners are probably aware now of who I am, Andrew Davis, Bob Davis's son. I'm on the show, I'd say, every few months we do something together here and there.
Yeah.
It gives a nice little chance to cross the generational divide, sometimes a political divide, because on some issues I skew a little more left than I think you do, or at least that's how we argue about stuff. And so I recently did a video for this YouTube channel I have been doing called The Millennial Project. And this video was about what is now being called patriotic correctness by a Cato Institute scholar. So this guy's name is Alex Narasta, and he is, again, at the Cato Institute. He studies immigration policy for the Cato Institute. What draws me to the Cato Institute as someone who tries to stay somewhat ideologically independent is that I think it's a really interesting place because they are kind of right-leaning, but they're not necessarily conservative in the sense of like Heritage Action or AEI or some
they're,
of these other—
They're more libertarian than they are right or left-leaning, really.
Right, and so what I kind of describe it as when I talk to my friends and stuff is it's prioritizing small government and less spending without demanding this social conservative conformity, which I think is really interesting. And I love reading their stuff because they never hesitate from criticizing the right. And I think it's really healthy for the right to have, to have criticism levied on itself by itself rather than just from liberals.
Well, the thing that's interesting is that the left can take offense to what the Cato Institute might say, and so can the right. So, obviously, if you take offense to something someone says in discussing an issue, that's the first indication that you've siloed and that you refuse to hear anything that doesn't agree with your point of view.
The Cato Institute is they kind of tend to like, I don't know if it's fair to say that they're not siloed, but they're a little bit less siloed, let's say, than everybody else. And I think what's really interesting about them, again, is that they're this kind of, the way I think of them, and maybe this isn't the right image, but I think of them as a little bit more of like a renegade bunch within the conservative, side, these people who are trying to kind of update the ideology for the 21st century, something that interests me because I'm a millennial.
And again, we've agreed to do what my friend Tom and I used to do on the show, which is we're not going to debate, but libertarians aren't necessarily right. And as you know, I have that. I think libertarians are actually truly radical leftists in the true sense of the word, in a classic sense of the word. And we've argued about that before. So I wouldn't expect them to be defending the right any more than they defended the so-called political left, right? So that's kind of our thing on the Cato Institute.
The thing is, and we've talked about this before too, they're not necessarily independent from the right because they are funded by people like the Koch brothers. They're part of the Washington establishment. In their own way, but within that establishment, they're a little bit more renegade. They have a little bit different of an outlook. And I think for anyone who's interested in like trying to get kind of a grip on an out of the box conservative mindset, Cato is a good place to go. I know you hate the words conservative and liberal, but I'm just using them conveniently here because I think it's just easier for people to deal with what we already know conservative and liberalism kind of means in our day to day lives.
Yeah, and I actually think that. I actually think that eventually I will apply a religious I will religiously apply the system of not referring to the left as liberals and the right as conservatives, because I think that these terms have lost their descriptive appeal for me. Anyway, we don't have to argue about that. So you ran across this guy that wrote this piece or number of pieces, I don't know, scholar for Cato. Tell me about him. Tell me about what he said.
Okay, so from what I understand, Alex Narasta is an immigration policy analyst for the Cato Institute. He has done a podcast about this issue where he goes into it for about 20 minutes, and he also has done an article for the Washington Post as well as an article for the Cato kind of blog website. So they're the same article. I don't know why it's in the Washington Post, but it is. So I don't know if that's
good
or
bad
for your listeners.
Well, it doesn't mean, here again, this is the presupposition that the Washington Post can't publish anything that isn't, orthodox leftist, right? Why couldn't they?
By the way, this guy is not a fan of political correctness.
I know that.
I just wanted to elaborate for people who might be listening, He makes a concerted effort to explain how much he does not like political correctness and how he does not like safe spaces. And the reason he brings up this issue of patriotic correctness, as he calls it, patriotic correctness being political correctness on the right, he brings it up because he says that political correctness is one of the reasons that Democrats suffered such a staggering and unexpected defeat in November. And so what he worries about is if the conservative movement takes on its own version of political correctness, again, this thing called patriotic correctness, that they will suffer a similar staggering defeat in the next 4 or 8 years. Something that I
or
think,
two.
You know, people, Yeah, or two. I mean, something that I think people who voted for Trump, people who might be riding high right now, might want to think about as they, you know, think about how they're going to interact with politics in the next few years.
He calls it patriotic correctness. I call it Republican triumphalism, that there is – you can't say anything that – and I'm going to give some examples. The latest one is any discussion of a friend of mine posted a caricature of former Attorney General Loretta Lynch with an article from this guy who does this blog, or I don't even know what it is. It's Kevin Jackson of the Black Sphere, which is decidedly not a very thoughtful piece of work in general. It's very reactive most of the time and not really detailed. But basically, he purports to prove that because Loretta Lynch signed the FISA orders regarding surveillance requests for surveillance of Trump Tower, that proves that that they've all committed felonies. And I said that doesn't prove anything because she would have been the top law enforcement official, and she would have signed the FISA requests for the administration. The president wouldn't necessarily have signed them. And this produced a firestorm of me demanding people prove that there is a conspiracy between Loretta Lynch, because here's the thing. Because Bill Clinton appeared on the tarmac with Loretta Lynch, that proves that there was a conspiracy. And then there's, you know, Mark Levin puts out a timeline, and that, you know, supposedly proves. Of course, timelines don't prove anything. If you disagree with that, just simply look at anything involving the assassination of John F. Kennedy. You know, there are plenty of timelines that make you think this, that, or the other thing happened. But in fact, if you read Bulosi's, you know, 1,010 or whatever it is, 1,100 page dissertation on the assassination, you see the preponderance of actual criminal evidence doesn't point to anyone else other than Oswald. To make a long story short, this produces a firestorm of response because you can't discuss it. You're not allowed to say, hey, what's your proof? They automatically assume that you're a Democrat and that you're challenging them. And I am anything but a Democrat. I just wanted to see the proof.
Right. And I think that is, you know, from what I understand, that is what this guy, Alex Narasto, with his patriotic correctness concept is really trying to get at. It's that, you know, just as much on the right as on the left, you have people, you know, kind of attempting to use social pressure to control what can and cannot be talked about. And I think that it's just really important because people on the right portray themselves as these bastions of free speech, these guardians of the Constitution.
And of rational thought.
Snowflakes. We're not libtards. I don't even know what that word means, but I hate it. And I don't like the fact that it's like, you know, it is a combination of the word liberal and retarded. I think it's like, it's just like,
it's gross, retarded.
Whatever. So it's like, it's like, I don't know what people think they're achieving with that, but again, it's just, I think the whole thing here is that if conservatives cannot have an honest discussion with themselves about their ideology, that the ideology is going to get, you know, stagnant, it's going to crack, it's going to buckle, and then they're going to lose. And I think it's hard to think about that right now because we've just seen this totally unexpected, staggering defeat of the Democrats. I don't know if that's going to keep happening. I also think, if I can just say one more thing, you know, it all reminds me of that last scene out of Charlie Wilson's War where, you know, they're standing on the balcony after they've kind of like defeated the Soviet Union in Afghanistan and through the CIA program. And like, you know, the main CIA guy is standing there and he's like, you know, the ball keeps on bouncing. You know, it's going to go up and down and, you know, we might have a lot more problems in Afghanistan later. Right. And obviously we did. Obviously, the movie was made after he had those problems. So who knows, you know, if it was that profound. But
well, it's the idea of – sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But I mean it's
– that's all I got.
It's the idea of managing, you know, in the intelligence community, particularly in intervention, forward intervention covert intervention. You always have to manage the strings going forward, right? Or you have the blowback has to be managed. But anyway,
I think it's really about conservatives recognizing like the ball is going to keep bouncing. It's not over because Trump was elected. There's going to be elections in 2 years, in 4 years, in 6 years, in 8 years. And, you know, I can tell you, I'm here in Los Angeles. I know two people but I've covered two people in a local election here who got involved because of Bernie activism. And, you know, they were involved in a bunch of other stuff before that. But this blossoming of sort of, you know, progressive politics in Los Angeles has already put, you know, a bunch of people into the political process. So, you know, I think at this point, you know, if conservatives want to stay in power, they're really going to have to make sure that they are ready to have a real honest discussion about what they're trying to do. They've been saying for years, give us power, we can show what we can do. Well, I want to see it because right now I'm not seeing it.
No, it's not going to happen because one of the shibboleths of the triumphant Republican is that Donald Trump won by a landslide, which is entirely untrue. We know that he won by, plural victories in some key states, which he's entitled to his victories. The only place he came anything close to a landslide would have been in Ohio. He won by, small numbers in Michigan and Iowa and places like that, but he didn't win by a landslide. But you see, if you suggest to Republicans that the president is in office not by a landslide, but by let's just say a couple of lucky breaks in Florida and Ohio and Michigan and Iowa and Pennsylvania, well, that's not acceptable. You have to support Trump no matter what, or you're a Democrat, you're a panty waist, you are a communist, you are a Marxist. What happens then is that they will resort to bullying, which is oddly enough exactly what the left has done, and I've experienced it, so I know very well what the left will do when they catch someone that they don't like doing something they don't like. They will throw everything they've got at you, and they will bully you, and they will call you names and everything else if you go against left political correctness. The right isn't supposed to do this, because the right's supposed to be able to have a rational discussion about policy. What happened?
I don't know. I don't know. Alex Narasta traces this back to the Bush era, so he doesn't even say that it's necessarily a new thing. I think what makes it so relevant to our conversation today is that clearly there is a much more rigid, a rigid framework of saying, like, you can't talk about certain facts, you can't, really scrutinize certain things Trump is doing, because if you do, you'll quickly start to see cracks. And so I think, obviously, there's always contradictions in the way that political parties work. It's not easy to put together a cohesive political ideology. But I think with Trump, because he's fused this populism with the Republican establishment, there's a lot more contradictions than usual. And so I think it's really interesting. Can I just bring up one,
sure,
one example? Because I have this quote sheet that I use for my video. It happens to just still be on my desk. And so I think a really good example of this that Alex brings up in his article is, this idea that according to patriotic correctness, unionized public employees who can't be fired are bad at their jobs and are more interested in increasing their own power than fulfilling their public duties, except if they are police or border patrol officers who are unselfishly devoted to their jobs,
right,
despite the fact that they're in unions. Right?
Government assistance is unacceptable, but for veterans, it's anything's okay. Everything's okay with it. You could provide veterans with homes, minimum incomes, and anything on the right. You can't say anything negative about veterans. Not that I would, but they deserve a special status in the. Is the word hagiography?
I don't know what that means.
It's basically the sainthood of they are the sainted on the right. The veterans are sainted.
Well, I do think the veterans are sainted kind of everywhere because, obviously they've made a pretty big sacrifice. But I think
the point I'm making here
I think I'm agreeing with you.
No, I know you are. I'm not trying to debate. I want to make it clear for the audience. I'm saying that this is the Republicans in general are usually against government interventions and welfare of any kind. But when it comes, because what you just said was a double standard about police, that unions are bad, except police unions are okay. I've fallen into that trap. And the other trap is welfare is bad. But when it comes to veterans, no problem. We don't have any problem with it.
Right. And I think it's fine in some forms if you're on the left, because there is a whole array of kind of protected groups, and many would say for very good reasons there's this whole array of protected groups, right? But if you're on the right, you make this a huge pillar of your political identity, that you think everyone should be equal, etc. But then it seems when you hear about this patriotic correctness concept that maybe that's not really the truth. Maybe there's some contradictions there. I have one more that I think it's a really good example as well. Can I bring that up? This one really resonated with me. So this one really resonated with me. According to political correctness, where is it? According to political correctness, poor white Americans are the victims of economic dislocations.
You don't have to keep reading it over and over again.
I just want to make sure it's clear. So according to patriotic correctness, poor white Americans are the victims of economic dislocation and globalization beyond their control, while poor blacks and Hispanics are poor because of their failed cultures. Great example, because you so often have this like word culture kind of substituted for like
my tribe.
It's just racism. And I think it's great because it shows how there's, again, this like this weird double standard. Like, oh, if you worked in a factory and you're a poor white person because you lost your factory job, like, that's not your fault. But if you, you know, if you live in the inner city in Los Angeles or Chicago or in, you know, suburban poverty, which is an increasing trend across the country, you know, and you're of, you know, a black or Hispanic minority, you know, then, you know, it's your fault. You know, and I just think it's just, again, this weird way of looking at the world that can only be explained by some sort of a, you know, double standard.
Well, I feel bad because I hope that's not how it is. But I think increasingly the other thing that I notice is that now the right increasingly has its own history, which kind of gets started with these narratives that like, for example, it's very possible that there was a conspiracy between Loretta Lynch and former President Clinton and President Obama to surveil Trump Tower and find out what they were up to and so forth. But and I'm not opposed to that being discovered. But what I'm saying is, you know, saying that is a narrative without evidence is beyond just not rhetoric. It becomes a narrative that they will cling to permanently. It's a permanent narrative now.
I think it goes all the way back to even the history of the founding of the country. You know, you have this kind of revisionist idea on the right that, you know, America is and always has been a Judeo-Christian nation, that America is and always has been, you know, a country that is demographically basically in the 1960s, the idea that America is and always has been all about small government, which, you know, those are ideas that are undoubtedly active in our political, you know, discourse, but it doesn't mean that that's how things are. And I think we've talked a lot about this idea that, you know, if you read a few books about history, that doesn't mean you quote unquote studied history. What it means is that you read a few books about history, especially if they're, you know, like Fox News or MSNBC pop culture histories. I think what is really important about having historians talk about history is that, you know, maybe they're from academia, maybe they skew a little bit more left as a group, but they do have to produce peer-reviewed material for publish. And that is a standard that means there is a little bit higher quality of information. And if you want to change the perspective of that information, you have to be able to, you know, contend with that peer-reviewed standard, which I don't think a lot of people, you know, who are adhering to this patriotic correctness are really able to do or willing to do, for lack of
a better. No, I mean, literally what you have is you have books being suggested that are only, like, you read Bill O'Reilly's book or you read Mark Levin's book, but you don't read Controlling the State by Scott Gordon. You don't read The Civil War by Shelby Foote. You don't read, you only read what is permissible to read in pop culture on the right, and so you get, and, you know, I mean, Mark Levin write a great book that's got some balance on it when it comes to the Constitution, but you're only getting that point of view. You're not getting any other points of view. And the thing about reading history is the more you read, the more you can detect BS when you see it. But it's a process. You can't just read one book about the Constitution and be knowledgeable about the Constitution. You know, my example that I've been using lately is I've had to read three books now, and I don't know what caused me to start being interested in this, but I've had to read three books now about World War II aircraft to fully understand the engineering behind them and what each of these aircraft did. And the reason that I kind of got into it was this whole Trent thing about we almost lost World War II, you know, and when you tell people that, they're shocked to hear you say that. But when you read about the fact that I always thought we won because we had the best planes, but most of the planes of World War II are pretty evenly matched, except for strategic bombers.
What about the Panzer tanks versus the Sherman tanks? I mean, you see the actual, like, the comparison size wise, you're like, oh my God.
Well, size doesn't matter in that case, but we just made a lot more Sherman tanks than they made Panzer IVs. And I think that was the key difference. And we don't need to relitigate World War II. People should know Our conversations go on for 3 and 4 hours sometimes, and we're literally yelling at each other. And now when I go out to dinner with my friends, I'm yelling at them, and it's your fault. It's because I'm yelling at you.
I get you riled up. Well, I push back, and you push back. And I think that's what's so important, though, is that you have to have conversations where you push back against yourself, against others, and really, you know, try to put these ideas through the ringer. Because if you don't, we're not going to end up in a place where we have productive, you know, political progress. And I think that's just what's so important to me is, like, right now I see what's going on with repeal and replace. I'm not a massive fan of Obamacare, but I'm really not a fan of the repeal and the replace effort. I just think
you actually surprised me because you thought they should just repeal it in total.
Well, I was talking to you after a kind of negative experience I had enrolling in Governor California. I don't know if that would be like a policy position that I would stake out, but you know, I was connected with some what I feel were very dishonest insurance brokers through Covered California. So I was really angry about that. But
that Covered California sent to you because that's the mandate of Obamacare. But that,
So this is just show that I'm not sitting here like on my high horse and being like, see, Obamacare is the best thing in the world. I did a whole video about the problems that have been, you know, that have emerged within the Obamacare framework. But, you know, I just don't know if Republicans are addressing those problems. And that's the issue with patriotic correctness, is that instead of really making progress in the policy realm, you just revert to these weird words like deep state and snowflake and, you know, reverse racism and Merry Christmas instead of Happy Holidays and all that stuff. And it becomes about that instead of about making sure people are covered to get health care or whatever it is that we need to actually do, you know?
Well, I would also criticize, you know, I hate that I have to, if we're going to criticize Republicans, I feel like I have to criticize the left because I don't really care. I don't pay any attention to the left because I simply don't have any truck with them at all. I don't understand a lot of their political ideas. I mean, I know a lot of people on the left and they're my friends, but we don't talk politics. I mean, my friend Jill, oh my God. We go back and forth. We go to dinner and we're literally, it's worse than you and me. And she's totally Bernie. And it's like her mom, who is a total Ranger, you know, leftist, is more conservative than Jill. So I can't even, we don't even talk about it. But, you know, I mean, my political milieu is the Republicans. And I am shocked at the level of the same sort of fanaticism that I'm seeing on the right with anything that doesn't, if you don't use the right words, if you try to say, hey, you know, we don't know where Trump's economic policy is going to go yet, you are treated to just a deluge of statements of, well, isn't it good that they canceled the pipeline? And isn't it good that this, and can't you say anything? Or why don't you criticize the Democrats and not the Republicans? And the answer is, I don't really care about the Democrats. You know, they're not in power. They're on defense at this point. So, you know, any thoughts on that sort of little speech?
I don't know. I mean, the whole thing is conflicting to me because I understand that, you know, any social group, any political party, there's going to be pressure to adhere to a vocabulary, to talking points, to all that stuff. I think what takes it to the next level with this idea of patriotic correctness is, again, the hypocrisy of it, which I mentioned earlier. This idea that conservatives are the bastions of free speech, yet they seem to employ just as many speech controls at this point as the liberals that they decried, you know, do.
What do you mean by a speech control? Just peer pressure, basically?
Yeah, I mean, it's the idea that if you deviate from that, you're going to lose listeners. Or if you deviate from that, you can't get elected to office. Or if you deviate from that, you know, your books aren't going to be bought. And so that is a social pressure, just like, you know, and again, I actually think that some parts of political correctness are good. So, you know, I just want to preface it
like
by saying
what?
That. But what I'm trying to get at
like
is that
what?
Those are the same
wait, wait a
things,
second. What are you talking about?
Those are the same things that, you know, that conservatives are just going to town on people on the left for, about how there's no freedom to speak, you know, about issues on, you know, academic campuses, you know, stuff like that. It's like, you know, but they're doing the same thing. They're pushing their authors to put out the same type of like constitutionalist, you know, like
I have to add a point parenthetically. You're not saying constitutionalism is wrong. You're not saying that.
That's a really good point. I'm not. What I'm saying is that the conservative side is pressuring people into a kind of narrow alley of how they have to look at issues just as much as they claim the left is. And I just think that that's important to recognize. While sometimes we go into these false equivalencies, especially me, because I'm trying to stay away from fully endorsing one side or the other. I really do think that this social pressure is very intense on the right, and I think that both of us have experienced that. And I think if any of your listeners attempt to break or deviate from the party line, they will experience that as well in their social circles. And I would try it if I was a listener. I would go out and try it and see the reaction and see if maybe you agree with this idea of political correctness, or sorry, patriotic correctness.
Republican triumphalism. And you know, the thought comes to mind, why is this? What's the culprit? And I think a lot of it has to do with really poor information, believing things you want to believe, being fed things that, being told what you want to hear, being fed ideas that agree with, you know, a worldview that you already have, as opposed to being critical. Now, I've simply reached the point now where I've literally become a market anarchist. I would love to try not having a government with some reasonable, and my market anarchist people would disagree with me because of course they have their own sort of, you know, alleyway of thought. But
go ahead.
No, I mean, I've reached a point where I believe that we've been living in somewhat of a socialist construct for the last 70 years, and that Republicans are just as much socialist in their orientation as Democrats, and that we're basically arguing the same side of a coin rather than two different sides of a coin. So it's not a Federalist, anti-Federalist argument anymore. It's not an anti-slavery, pro-slavery argument anymore. It's literally... I want socialism to 30% versus 100% socialism. That's what it's become. And Republicans like to think of themselves as capitalists, as not socialists, but we live in a socialist construct. We have Social Security, Medicare Part D, Medicare, Medicaid. We have veterans programs. We have mortgage tax deductions. We have all sorts of, you know, we're happy when the government gives us a tax credit. You know, isn't it wonderful they're giving us this? No, it's our money. We should be able to, we're giving them that money. Why do I have to pay, you know, to both the employer side and the employee side of Social Security, for example? And they never give me that back. But see, these ideas of entitlement are just as much on the right as they are on the left. So we're not really arguing small government anymore. We're arguing smaller levels of a socialist footprint and larger levels of a socialist footprint. You and I had a conversation the other night where we both agreed that we're probably going to end up with single-payer health at some point, probably under the Trump administration. And by the way, it might shock Republicans to learn that he actually endorsed the idea of single-payer health at one point in the campaign. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, just to go back for a second, I don't know if I agree that I would call our country socialist, but...
I didn't call it socialist. I said we're living in a socialist political construct.
My spot. I'm just, okay. Just let me work through my thing. So I do not feel that Republicans are offering a small government alternative. They're offering an alternative that says we will give you tax breaks instead of subsidies. They're offering an alternative that says we will send money from the federal government to the states instead of stop taking that money from you. We, you know, are looking at a Republican Party that is willing to give the states more power devolved, but it still is rooted in the federal government, that power. So I think it's really, really critical to understand, because, and especially with this repeal and replace effort, because there's a lot of talk about how they're going to send all this money back to the states and we're giving healthcare back to the people and taking it away from the Beltway. And I just don't know if any of that is at all true. They're giving tax breaks. There still is essentially an individual mandate of some kind. It's not it doesn't have the same name. But this is the stuff that patriotic correctness, in my opinion, you know, keeps people from talking about, because the Republicans are out there saying, you know, repeal and replace, we did it, we're doing it right now, whatever, it's done, then we can move on to tax reform. But the question is, did they really do it?
No. I mean, look at Rand Paul. He wrote a repeal bill that's four pages long. I mean, and basically called them out on it, saying, look, here's the Senate version of this, and it's let's get rid of it, and then we'll start over at some point. But you said you were going to repeal this. But, you know, I want to return to this concept of populism, because what the media calls populism really is just nothing more than big governmentism. You know, they're saying that $1 trillion stimulus package, you know, trade protectionism, things of that nature, you know, creating manufacturing jobs and all that is populist. But really, it's just more big government. It's big government. It's basically socialism with a red tie as opposed to socialism with a blue tie, at least in the minds of the market anarchist.
and what I think is interesting about that, too, is that you have the Trump administration, at least, and this is a little bit half-baked, but I'm going to just say it anyways, so check on it if you disagree with me, whoever might be listening. But, you know, I think what the Trump administration seems to be doing is especially in the realm of free trade. Well, they want to enact more government regulation, but that sits in contrast to what Republicans say that they're about. So when they go out and they talk about trade, they have to build a narrative that says, well, it's actually not free trade. What we have is unfair trade because we've been taken advantage of by other countries.
So we've relabeled it as unfair trade. But
so now the balance is off with that narrative. And so in order to fix the balance, they're going to use the government, and that's going to make us more free, and it's going to make us have free, real free trade. And that is happening all over the place, I think, in their rhetoric. And so I disagree with that. I think, again, the only way you can be susceptible to that is if you're not scrutinizing these facts.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that, again, just patriotic correctness, at least as described by Alex Narasa, prevents us from doing.
Is there a solution at all? I mean, is there a personal solution to this when it comes to social media, when it comes to personal conversations about this stuff?
I think there is. I mean, I don't think people are stupid. I don't think people on the right are stupid. I never have. I think that sometimes they might be maybe less informed in some ways. But, I mean, there are a lot of very smart, very productive people on the right who own businesses, who make up a huge portion of the tax bracket. I mean, these are not people who are like unproductive or, you know, out of the mix. So I think, like, you have to apply the same scrutiny that you would apply to your balance sheet to these politics, and I don't understand why there's a divide there, you know?
Good point. Well, all right, I should let you get back to whatever godforsaken thing you're doing in the City of the Angels.
I'm putting up an Instagram post.
You're putting up an Instagram post, a screenshot from the interview?
No, I'm putting up, it's a really cool picture of the Chinatown Gate in Los Angeles' Chinatown,
which
is
very cool.
Really cool looking, and it's green. It's lit with green neon lights, which is really unique because a lot of times Chinatown has red lights. So I thought this would look really cool. Did it with my new camera. I'm pretty psyched.
All right. Thanks again to Andrew Davis of the Millennial Project. And I'll put the links in on the page of the Bob Davis podcast so you can find all that stuff that we were talking about with Cato, as well as the Millennial Project YouTube channel. Well, you heard us talking about it. Trade in the news these days with all the talk about foreign manufacturing and these initiatives regarding trade in Congress and with the executive branch. Some companies are preparing to bring some of their manufacturing back to the United States. Now, there are reasons to manufacture in the United States, some good ones. If your company is considering bringing back any of their manufacturing to the United States, remember American manufacturing. DepoStar, American design, engineering, and manufacturing right in Minnesota. DepoStar, D-E-P-O-T, DepoStar. Visit their website at depostar.com. Remember, xgovernmentcars.com, Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the Expeditions, they've got the Dodge Chargers, they've got the Yukons, they've got, of course, the Chevy V8s, the Ford Police sedans, and the Ford Police SUVs and Crown Vics while they last. I love them. Been talking about X Government Cars for years. They really are a great value. xgovernmentcars.com.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Thanks to you for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes. Tune in right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Selecting individual podcasts or listening to the stream. Really appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And of course, thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 610, Davis and Davis, father and son talking about political correctness on the right.